Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisswell.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 135. Van Burnett joined, as always, by Steve Gisswell. Today is Thursday, April 18th. Happy baseball. We are in the heart of the month that leads to overreactions, also some valuable ads, and sometimes some regrettable drops. And today we are talking, Steve, about pretty much the panic meter, how worried we are about some struggling hitters. It is a fun list of names, but maybe not a fun start to the season for those who invested on draft day. I think you and I both have some skin in the game for some of these players here. But we've done this, you know, three full seasons. We've played the game for a lot longer than that. So we kind of know that it can ebb and flow. It can be weather related. It can just be a funk where, you know, you look at this sample size in any given season. And if it's in June, July, people don't pay as much attention. But when it's the start of the season, the sky is falling. That said, the sky might be falling on some of these guys. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We got about a dozen names. Going to be a great show. Steve, how's it going over there?
Yeah, it's good. I definitely am dealing with some struggling hitters in a lot of my leagues, particularly the listener league, which I am off to a very, very slow start in the WAF listener league that we did with On the Wire. I think there was one point yesterday or the day before where it's a 12-team league. I think I was in 12th, you were in 11th. So not a great representation from the pod. But, hey, it's early.
So what did you think of me splashing big for Colton Cowser there? I don't know if you saw the
I did see that. It was a over $200 bid, right?
Oh, yeah, into the threes, Steve.
Yeah, I think it was in the threes. Okay, yeah, yeah. The runner-up was pretty high, too.
It was.
Did you have Robert? Do I have Robert in that league? I think I might, honestly. So maybe I should have been more involved in Cowser. But and hey, it paid off. It paid off this week, right? You got it. I think got done a steal today. He looks great. So,
yeah. I mean, it's you know, part of it too is, and that's not today's show topic, but
yeah,
I feel like I've lost out on the early shiny toys enough in recent seasons where it's like, are you ever actually tapping out your fab down to like $1? And I know I'm preaching to the choir because you're kind of an aggressive early on mentality as well. But I feel like I've woken up in August before with like 400 of my 1,000 left. And it's like, probably could have splurged a little bit more for cash.
I've done both. There's definitely more of an occasion where I have more than I would like to spend. But there has been a few tough times, when
rubbing pennies together.
Yeah, exactly. Or have a last few weeks of like no bids, or like you can't even pick up, like you need to bid. It's not a zero bid. NFBC isn't a zero bid or $0 bid league. Like if you don't have a dollar, you can't pick up anyone. Even if there isn't a contesting bid. So, you know, I try to keep that in mind. I have had some lessons learned, as far as overspending.
So league standings right now, to put a quick, because we did say we'd be in touch on the listener league, and we've got listeners who are tuning in right now in the league. But you know, your hosts here, Steve Gisswelli, is coming in at 12 out of 12, and yours truly at 9 out of 12. So it ain't great early on, which is probably right in line with the theme of the show, right, Steve? Should we be worried?
Yeah. No, and I think the rule of thumb for any of these guys, and we're focusing on higher end guys, like guys that cost, I don't think we're talking about anyone below like a 10th to 11th rounder pick, like 150. So like guys that basically should not be dropped for at least another month or so. Even with these concerns, and some guys that should like not be dropped at all. Like Trey Turner comes to mind last year, where you're sitting 3 months into the season, still waiting for it to happen. And you're starting to get your doubts, and eventually he makes up for it in 3 weeks. Yeah. Like
Bichette,
the quality of
one,
players which, that we're talking about for the most part here, you need to just continue to hold or even buy low. Despite us digging through as deep as possible, and looking at things that are meaningful in a smaller sample, trying to get ahead of the curve to see what's going on under the hood. And even if there really isn't a reason to hold on to these guys, you still have to do it. Not to like make this whole episode pointless. There's still going to be some valuable information here, but essentially you just have to hold or even buy low on a lot of these guys.
Well, and I think... Yes. Well, while true, I think each of these cases are a little bit unique, so we can almost figure out where we land on the fly. And it might be a situation where you look to trade.
Yeah,
eventually,
yeah.
Some of these guys
or adjust your expectations at
for sure.
worst, right?
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. Build a trade, you know, with other pieces to make up for the lost production or something like that. So. Let's start off, Steve, with Francisco Lindor. And this one, I remember, I think it was my, I don't even have to look at the stats. It was my wedding year. My brother and I were at a Cardinals-Mets game. So 2021. And I think it was Lindor's first year with the Mets. And that was the year that everyone was, I mean, it was like a noteworthy thing. I think he was around the Mendoza line. And it seems like this has kind of followed Lindor a bit, that people who are kind of his detractors in the offseason are, you know, likely to take an early victory lap. But it feels like every season when we're talking about midseason bounce backs, I can cue up Steve Gisuelli on like WAF episode 75, where you're talking about how, you know, he was pressing last year. His XBA looks like it's going to be better. And back of the baseball card, end of the year, Lindor always seems to figure it out. But that is what managers are hoping for right now, because he is hitting 145 with a 259 OBP and a 217 slug, a homer and a caught steal. Talk to the Lindor managers out there about what we think. And I know we had a listener who weighed in on this as well. But thoughts on Lindor? I don't have many shares. It was just kind of a strange turn in the draft. But I've always been a Lindor guy, so it's tough to put too much into this in my own opinion, but what do you think?
Yeah, this was inspired by our listener, good listener Joey, who asked about Lindor and sort of inspired this whole topic. So thank you, Joey, of my home league. I see him representing the shirt if you're watching the stream, the League of Champions that we're in. So he has Lindor in this league. That's spurred this question and inspired this topic. So thank you for that. Yeah, I think Lindor is kind of an easy one. Honestly, there's a lot to like under the hood as far as the plate skills. He's only striking out 9% of the time. He's walking 10% of the time. And then all the underlying metrics to drive that strikeout and walk rate and plate skills are like career bests. As far as chasing, his O-swing is the lowest it's been in his career at 25%. He's got a good contact percentage at 84%. Like, this is underlying skills that are prime Lindor from 2019 when he was, like, you know, a 280, 35 homer guy. Sure, there is the caveat that he is much better as a righty. And that's going to be, you know, only a third of the time that you face a lefty. But he's only had 19 plate appearances as a righty this year. So he hasn't faced many lefties yet. And he's hitting .316 in those situations. So, like, once, you know, he starts to see a larger sample of lefties, that'll bring the line up and he'll just improve against righties. Like, he's not going to bat whatever, you know. 100 against righties this year, right. Even though he is better as a right-handed hitter. So, you know, there hasn't been amazing barrel rates or quality contact skills yet, but he's still hitting the ball decently hard. It's like 50th percentile. So the fact that he's having this rough as a start and still hitting the ball as hard as 50% of the league is a you know, a solid sign. But I just wanted to bring up this graphic too to kind of wrap up my point. But this is just what he does. Like every single April, and if you're watching on the stream, we have a graph up of his 15 game rolling average for WOBA by year, and it's broken up by month. And basically every year since 2018, there's just a straight line up from April with him starting poorly. Really, the only time they didn't start super bad was 2020, but there was an extended slump in like May into July, and then he brought his line back up throughout the year. So this is just what he does. Francisco Lindor is the poster boy for a slow starter, and if anyone is panicked about this because of what's going on, I would be all over the opportunity to try and get him. You know, I'd pay fair price for him, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you'd have to if you're running to a frustrated manager this early, but this is just what Francisco Lindor does. He starts off slow.
Yeah, it's the hitter version of Luis Castillo of old with like the cold weather or something. But it's not the trade show. But Steve, I do think, you know, we talk every year about like tips and tricks, but I think if you come in honest with the Lindor manager and you're just saying, hey, I know he's been struggling, the numbers don't look great, I'm definitely, you know, I'm looking to buy low. Who would you want for him? Like, I've found more success with that candid convo rather than trying to be like, he sucks, like, this is me, I'm doing you a favor by trying to take him off your hands.
Yeah, that stuff. I hate the here's all the reasons why this guy is bad, so you should trade him for me. Like, why do you want him if you're listing all those reasons why?
Yeah, we'll get into that rant in our like June trade special show that we do every year. But I did want to call out on some of like the underlying numbers, you know, for his barrel rate, hard hit rate, not looking that good. He's kind of a guy like a Xander Bogaerts, or even, I know we'll talk about Nick Castellanos, but some of the guys that defy, you know, needing like a all red stat cast or pitcherless page. Like in 2022, it looked like that as well. And he was 270, 26 homers and 16 steals. So sometimes Lindor does kind of fool us. He's still just 30 years old. Like, I think Lindor is going to be fine. So, I think that's a really good one to start. And I do think it looks rough enough that there might be opportunity here. And if you're the manager, you just got to hold your nose. They do have the Dodgers in a 3-game series, so it might look bad before it looks better. But after that, they have the Giants, the Cardinals, which, hey, talk about a get-right series. And then the Cubs outside of, you know, Imanaga, I think there's opportunity there. Although they've been certainly better than the Cardinals. But, Lindor, I think we're about a week, 2 weeks away from him already starting to right the ship. Another one, Steve, that is, you know, you shouldn't spend too much time worrying what's actionable unless he's not on your roster, and that's Julio Rodriguez. Off to a slow start, 206 average, 260 OBP, 221 slug. Has yet to homer. He is running on the base paths, and he's, I mean, I know he's had a lot of great plays in the outfield as well. So I think Julio is feeling fine. The strikeout rate we knew was mid-high 20s last season, and it's even higher this season so far with a 32.4% strikeout rate. Not great, but that said, Julio got off to a slow start last year. We talked about it all offseason when we were putting him next to Bobby Witt Jr., and I think he was still running to compensate last year, which is kind of what he's doing this year, which is great from Julio, by the way. Like, you like that he's looking out for his fantasy managers. He's like, if I'm not hitting homers, I'm at least going to win you this category this week. But you'd like to see it all click for Julio. So talk to me about what you're seeing under the hood, Steve, and how quick we think the turnaround's coming here.
Yeah, I think this one you can kind of gloss over. It's another Lindor situation, only it's like this is probably going to be the top five to top three player in fantasy, So there's really no conversation to be had as far as like acquiring him, I would even think, despite the slow start. You know, there's a bit of an elevated strikeout rate right now, but the underlying metrics are in line. The swing strike rate is up a bit at 16%. It was 14% last year, which is still pretty high, but Julio kind of sneakily is a high strikeout guy, but that's okay. He's been elite even with like a 28% strikeout rate. He did hit his first two extra bases, have his first two extra base hits of the season this year, both doubles that were hit hard at 105 and 108 miles per exit velocity. He has hit a ball 115 miles an hour so far this year. That's like top 2%. So like, there's no concern about like the actual underlying quality contact skills. It's just, you know, I think something that we have to get used to with Julio, with, you know, how bad his April was last year. Seems like it's slow this year. You know, he plays in Seattle where it's cold early in the season. It's not the greatest weather or the greatest ballpark. And he has had a lot more home games recently in Seattle. So they've only been on the road for six games. So two series, 11 home games, I think 12 if you count today. In Seattle, and I think he hits the Coors this weekend, so talk about a get-right series. I really don't think there's much to say about Julio other than that, you know, he's a slow starter. I know that's not hard-hitting or deep analysis, but there's really not much you can do with Julio at all, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. I think just to keep rolling, in that same discussion in draft season, it was like Julio, Bobby Witt, and Corbin Carroll for a long time. That was kind of your, you know, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there. And Corbin Carroll, I think, is a little bit more interesting of a use case here. Now, on one hand, the surface line stats look better than Julio. Still not great with a 232 average. The OBP 338 and the slug 304. He's got a homer. But 8 steals is what jumps off the page for our pro raiders out there, because we know that always works. But a 65 steal pace,
That's a realistic one too for Carroll. Like, he could get 65.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, he would be health pending, cruising to break 50. So yeah, I mean, talk
he did
about
last year,
up
even
he
missed a little bit of time and did have the injury that we'll talk about here shortly.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, he's helping you on that regard. That said, some of the underlying stuff here looks a little bit iffy, Steve. And like, you know, I know you've looked at the plate discipline, but just glancing through some of the stats, what jumped out to me was a 25% infield fly ball rate, which is how Fangraphs quantifies it, and that's based on the amount of fly balls. So a quarter of his fly balls hit are infield fly balls. Over on Savant, they do pop-ups, which is all batted balls, and that's 14% of all of his batted balls are infield flies.
So still really high, yeah.
Very high. It kind of suggests, I don't know if it's just timing off. I mean, I hate to just kind of guide it toward the narrative, because I know we had concerns. I mean, we're on the record on this show, what, a month and a half ago, saying that Corbin Carroll was probably one first rounder that, or I said that I didn't want to touch, because it just comes with that scare of the injury, and you want stability in that first round pick. So you knew that he was a boom bust guy. He's a guy who could go out and flirt with the type of Acuña season from last year. And he's probably, you know, other than Acuña, maybe the only guy who you could say that for, one or two. But it comes with this potential low floor, possibly injury, but now we're seeing the surface numbers not look great. Panic meter definitely feels a little bit higher for me than for Julio Rodriguez. But what are you seeing, Steve, looking under the hood?
Yeah. The plate discipline is good. The contact percentage is up. The O swing is down, so the chase rate is down. The contact percentage is up to like 87%, which is elite.
We got another Steve chart on the live stream as well. Yep. Yeah, this is great.
And this is getting to it. The quality contact is just pretty concerning. And I have a graphic up if you're watching the live stream. It just is 15-game rolling hard hit percentage over the last year. And you kind of see the hard hit dip down around game 60-ish of last year, which is when he had the first shoulder shoulder injury. And then that creeped back up towards the end of the year, which was encouraging, despite like the home runs not really being there in the second half. But it's taken a dip since basically like the beginning of September of last year. And it's continued to roll down as far as Corbin Carroll's hard hit percentage on a rolling 15-game basis. So there is some concern there. It's just a 24% hard hit rate this year. I know it's still not the greatest to look at those stats this year. Essentially, a rule of thumb is early on in the season, you want to look at stats that have denominators as pitches. So contact rate, chase rate, swinging strike rate. Things like hard hit, the denominator is balls in play, and those take much longer to stabilize. So it still is a bit too early, but a hard hit rate of 24%, even during an 18-game stretch like we've had, is a bit concerning, considering the fact that we are worried about the shoulder. So I don't know. I'm a little bit less worried because of the 8 steals, and I'm kind of like adjusting my expectations that, okay, maybe it's a 18 to 20 homer season rather than streaming on the 35-70 steal, like an Acuna-esque year.
Right.
Even if it's like 15, I'm still okay with that. And like the homer that he did hit, it was a really weird swing. He like tomahawk chopped it like the other way down the line. I remember watching it live. So it wasn't like this beautiful left-handed pull swing home run. Though he does have a double that, I think would have been out in a lot of stadiums to the pull side. So maybe it is just a bit too early. And I think weirdly, I'm kind of less concerned than I was in draft season. Maybe it's because he does have the 8 steals. The X stats say he should be better. I don't think that infield fly ball rate is sustainable, despite the fact that it is super high. But I would be okay acquiring Carroll if that even is possible. Even though I know it is more of like a Julio situation where no one's going to really want to sell on this based on 18 games. Like people that took him in the first round were aware of the shoulder injury. Mm-hmm. When they did that, right? Like, this isn't going to change their opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. And they're pretty excited about the 8 steals as well. But yeah, 63 batted balls in play. So it isn't, because is batted balls, is the magic number 50? Am I?
Yeah, it's 50. It's not a magic. It's like where you want to be. It's not sure. Ideal. It is a lot. He's
18
with that
games.
With that low strikeout rate, right? He is going to put a lot of balls in place.
Yep. And it's 18 games. I hear you for sure. I just, anytime the results kind of match the narrative, I do like the panic meter goes up just a little bit. So of this bunch, would you still say you're worried about Carroll? I mean, compared to Lindor and Julio, I think I would rank them Carroll, then a big gap, and then Lindor and Julio in that order. But I know it's kind of
as far as like your panic meter.
Uh-huh.
I would go with that, but I would like kind of
your low,
the gap may be the same, but the panic meter may be like a 3, whereas with Lindor and Julio it's like a 1.
Okay. That's fair. I'm one notch up on Carroll,
okay,
but
so
I
like
won't cry for doomsday.
Yeah.
So we got more names ahead, and we got 2 in a row that Steve and I have a personal issue with involving the Listener League. We'll get to that after this ad break.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Steve, we'll start with your listener league last place team currently. Again, small sample size, where you've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's actually at the cold corner for me in my home league as well. And
I have my home league as well, too.
Yeah. Tough to say if the bat is cold. While the average is 209, I feel like he has been crushing the ball. And I haven't even, you know, we were serial phone checkers. I haven't really gotten to a point where I'm like, come on, Vlad, like do something. You're killing my team. I feel like every time I'm kind of like, where's Vlad at? He hits another homer. So he's got three so far, you know, per usual, no one looks better under the hood than Vlad. We didn't do bold predictions, but I know you were saying in the offseason, Steve, that you were thinking Vlad. Was he a chalkboard?
Yeah, he was on my chalkboard.
Okay,
yes,
there it is. And I'm with you that I think this could be a mega year for Vlad, just like on the trajectory of his career. Feels like we've kind of lost sight of him in that first round type of value, but what, he's just still 24, 25 years old, and he just absolutely mashes the ball. So the 209 average is a little unfortunate, but the OPS compared to some of these other guys is a little more tolerable, yeah. Like a 710 plus. It's just we want Vlad to get up to that, you know, Herculean clip that he's usually at. But talk to me about Vlad, what you're seeing, because, yeah, we both got him on leagues that matter to us.
It seems like he's just a click away. Like, all of the metrics look great, like you said, as far as the quality of contact. Like, he's absolutely crushing the ball at a 58% hard hit rate. The 12% barrel rate is even good, considering you know, he does have an issue putting the ball on the ground, and that's still an issue. The sweet spots percentage is just 11th percentile, so you do want him to get some more loft on the ball. But it's, you know, six barrels on 53 balls in play. The launch angle isn't quite amazing, but it's also, you know, not 2022 levels, where it's pretty disappointing.
What was his homer total that year? Was it that, like, 22 or something?
No, that was and even, like, right, it's funny how we have this narrative. Like, it was 26 last year. It was 32 the year before. Like, right, it wasn't that bad. It was more like the 789 OPS last year, which I think was more driven by the fact that he didn't walk as much, and it was just 345 OEP. But yeah, he's walking 16% of the time this year, so that's going to carry the OPS. Not that, you know, walks or OPS is the most important thing. We want Vlad to hit homers, but mm-hmm. You know, the ground ball rate still is a bit too high. But I think that, you know, with the way that he's hitting the ball, and how hard it is, I think it's just a matter of time before he goes on a stretch. Like, he doesn't even need to hit that much. It's he's got to get it down to like 45%, like last year. Like, if that's the area where he gets it at, he's at 51 right now. You know, it's gonna be, it could be a special year. He is pulling the ball more, which is good. You know, when you're someone that hits the ball that hard, he's like first or third in fly ball exit velocity, 13th in fly ball line drive exit velocity, 4th in EV50, so like exit velocity on the top 50% of your balls in play. So it basically takes away like those dribblers that, you know, kind of bring down your average. He's 4th. So, you know, he's crushing the ball. I think it's just a matter of time before, you know, the average ticks up and falls in line with his XBA. And if there's any little bit of ground ball regression or improvement, there could be like a 35 homer season, which would put him back in like the first round conversation.
Yeah, because the ground ball rate right now is at a 51% more or less, and a couple years ago is at 52%. So at the same level in that year, to your point, Steve, it's like we kind of had to get this warped mentality. He had 32 homers. You know, it was that 2021 year where he had 48 and a 311 batting average. That was the year that the following year there were some one overall picks for Vlad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think he'll be fine. He's hitting the ball as hard right now. Again, the sample size, but as hard as he's ever hit it in his career, including mm-hmm. that year when he had 48 home runs. So definitely right in the power prime. So I think we're bound to see like a 35 plus homer year, I think, still, right?
I think so. I think 30 is a reasonable floor to expect.
Yeah.
And with how hard he's hitting the ball, I think it would come with a much better batting average than the 264 that he hit last year, and even mm-hmm. the 274 that he hit the year before. Especially when he doesn't strike out and takes a walk as well as anyone.
Yep. Yeah, something I like to do too, like at this stage of the season, is game log it and like switch over to StatCast to see the pitchers.
It's a great tool for hitters too, right? Like yes. You can see they give
like
you
for
the
Vlad. I mean he's gone against the Rays, the Astros, the Yankees, the Mariners, which you got Kirby, Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert in there, which by the way, he crushed a 460-foot homer off Logan Gilbert. There was Rockies that was, I don't know here. Were they in Coors for that? I don't think that they were.
I believe they were home for that.
So yeah, he didn't waste the Coors series or anything. And then yeah, the Yankees again. So all that to say, you know, those are some pretty good organizations when it comes to pitching. I know, you know, the Astros aren't quite what they've been, but he did have Fromber and Javier and everything, and these organizations, like I guess what I'm saying is there's probably a slate of games coming up where Vlad, you know, will be able to feast on some pitching. So like it there for Vlad. Let's move over to, I mean, I'll get out in front of it, Steve. I'll get out in front of it. He was one of my picks all off season. I'm not bailing yet, but it is looking bleak on defending Paul Goldschmidt and hoping he can right the ship. I think up and down the rundown today, Goldie looks like the one that's maybe highest on the panic meter, just because some of the narratives around the strikeout rate climbing up. My counter argument was that it still wasn't sky high. I mean, people were saying that the K rate was going the wrong direction. My response was, okay, yeah, but it's going to 23%. Not that big of a deal. This year it's at 28.4%, and all of the kind of pitch-by-pitch metrics don't look good to go with that. The surface stats for Goldie, in case you're not familiar, are looking very, very bleak. A 182 average, a 516 OPS, just one homer, which I think came, I forget if it was opening day or like the second game, but dude's gone ice cold, and unlike past years, there's not a lot of the batted ball metrics that you're just used to seeing with Goldschmidt. Again, one of my arguments of him aging and everyone saying, yeah, age 36. But my response is Goldie is not on the same standards as people. This guy is like built like a statue. He spent time in driveline in the off season, which I thought was going to be great for mobility and just dialing in. And now I'm starting to look at this and say, is this kind of a Bellinger thing where if it's not broke, don't fix it? Because last year, even though it was kind of a down year, we had 25 homers and a 268 average. It's kind of a Freddie Freeman light type of thing with 11 steals. But this year it's looking like are we going to get to 20, 25 homers? That's an uphill battle for Goldie. Also, the Cardinals had a rough slate of games to start the season, and the clubhouse isn't in great shape after an entire season of that last year. So him and Arenado, and Arenado's been a little better, getting all these questions. And on his interview, I didn't like, Steve, that he basically said, I could sit here and make excuses, but I'm just not playing well. I'm not hitting the ball hard, and it is what it is. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess, what do you want to hear? But that's Goldie. Your thoughts, man. I got plenty of shares, including the Listener League, where I'm in ninth place.
I think it was pretty easy to tell yourself why Goldschmidt would bounce back this year, even in his age 36 season, mainly because last year he hit the ball super hard. He hit it hard 50.8% of the time. That was top 7% of the league. His ex-woba was top 9% of the league. Like, he underperformed that. I think you could easily tell yourself, like, hey, this guy was just a little bit unlucky, and there were some things that he did better in 2023 than he did in 2022, a year that he won the MVP. This year, at least in the small sample, there's none of that to lean back on. The 26.2% hard hit rate is basically like half of where he normally is. He's like close to like, he's like an upper 40s percent hard hit guy, which always puts you in like the top 5% of the league. To be in 26, like, that's unheard of. That's bottom 10 percentile. Goldschmidt's never been there. I don't know if he's really ever been there for like a stretch as long as this, honestly, with how hard he always hit the ball. He hasn't hit a ball harder than 104.7 miles an hour. I know Max EV has its flaws and it's not really that predictive. But, you know, there's also a nice piece by Alex Chamberlain of Fangraphs that tells you the usefulness of max exit velocity in small samples, and a point being that basically at this point in the year, two-thirds of the league have hit their max exit velocity. Like, no, like, you're not going to hit a ball harder than what you've done for the most part, right? Not saying that Goldschmidt isn't going to hit a ball harder than 104.7. He definitely is this year, but it's just concerning that he hasn't done it yet.
To throw one thing out for all batted ball stuff for Goldie, and I don't know that this will make anybody feel better, but the Cardinals have been so bad at turning over their lineup that despite playing the same amount of games, 18, Goldie far and away has the least amount of batted balls of any
42,
name we've talked about. 42. Just 42.
He is striking out a bit more too, right?
Striking out more.
It's at 28%. Yeah. So, and he walks 11% of the time. So, there are, you
but
know,
some of those batted ball,
amount of play. Yeah,
there's just the sample size is even smaller for the batted ball.
Definitely.
Metrics for Goldie.
Sure.
I wanted
and
to.
They're not even good to look at. They're not great to look at this point too. So yeah, there's a big caveat and then a caveat on top of that.
Yeah, a lot of good points brought up though. I mean, I go ahead, Steve. I don't want to.
Yeah,
interrupt.
I mean, it seems like he's pressing. Like, he's. He's chasing more. He's has the highest swing strike rate of his career. It would be the highest chase rate of his career, basically, other than the first year. The only time it's been higher was that first year in St. Louis, which he was kind of pressing.
Definitely
after that
pressing.
Trade and yes. Did have that, you know, rough year. And that rough year was an 820 OPS. He's got a 530 right now with a 55 WRC plus. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that it's going to be this bad, but really the only answer is, like, hold your nose, maybe even bench him if you can until he starts to get right. But I don't know, man. I told myself I didn't want any Cardinals on my team again after having a lot last year, and somehow I ended up with, like, Nootbaar and Gorman. Nootbaar's been all right. Gorman's been okay. I did have Walker. I already dropped him, which we will get to. But they just seem like a mess as far as an organization, especially on the hitting side right now. So to answer the question on our ticker on the live stream, no, I don't think it's the end of it. But, like, yeah, I would take him out of my lineup until he shows, like, any signs of life.
Well, let me ask one other game here. we're always talking back of the baseball card, Steve. And I remember at a bar in St. Louis, I talked to one of their sports guys. I think it was Bernie Mikolas or something that I bumped into and asked, what's your prediction the year after Goldie had the down year? And he came in real low. And I was like, oh, no, he's going to hammer the over. This is what the thing is with Goldie is even when it's bad, he ends up making it very salvageable. So like 2019 when he was pressing with the Cards, still a 260, 34 homer. I would definitely take the under, of course, on the homer total. But just rattle off back of the baseball card stats that you think Goldie will end with. I will go first. I still think we'll see. I mean, he's got to climb out of this, but I think we'll see somewhere in the ballpark of 260 average. I think we'll get to 25 homers still, and I think the RBI runs will be kind of respectable, chipping in some speed. But do you think 260 and 25 is still attainable for Goldie?
I'll take a cop out. I'm looking at his projections for the rest of the season, and the Bad X has him at 260, 347, 443 with 23 homers and like 80 RBIs.
Okay. So right around.
I'll take like 260, 20 homers and you know, around 80 runs in RBIs, maybe a little more or less, depending if the Cardinals figure it out, which I don't think they will.
Well, I'm going to get vulnerable with you and our listeners here, Steve. I've got a nice parlay, about a five-legger that Goldschmidt, I need 25 and a half bombs, and everything else looks really good on that list. So just keep me in mind whenever you get that Twitter home run alert and it's Goldie, you know, just maybe show me a little love on Twitter.
I think it might be tough. I mean, and this is extremely anecdotal, and I don't think the metrics are live on Savant yet. But there is new bat speed tracking data that they are tracking on Savant. The data is not live, so we can't see it, but it was an anecdote and on a broadcast mentioned. And Paul Goldschmidt did go to Driveline this offseason, but two of his quickest or fastest bat speeds were measured for Goldschmidt in the first game of the season, which I think he did hit a home run in the first game. You know, it's grasping at straws, and it's extremely, extremely soft analysis. We don't have the data to back it up on Savant, but the Cardinals broadcast did mention that he did have two of his hardest swings this year. So maybe it's just taking a little bit for these results to work out in game.
Yeah, I think the last thing, soft analysis, is that you're absolutely right. Like the Cardinals, it's no secret that Arenado and Goldie were the window, and the Cards didn't get the pitching help they needed, and they all last year was like a huge disappointment to the fans. Everyone was like apologizing, and winter warm-ups was all about turning it around, and then here they are, bottom of the division. Like that's not where the Cardinals are used to being or the fan base. So I think there is an element of pressure. All that to say, if they get rolling, like if they can turn a corner, I know that against the Athletics this week, Goldie went 1-for-9, and that was the get-right series. They did at least grab two out of the three games in that series. So if the Cardinals can start stringing wins together, I just get the hunch that Goldie will kind of roll with the engine of the team. But again, soft analysis. I think we've talked about it enough for Goldie. And yeah, that one's looking a little bleak. We got another one. Another handful here, but let's do one more, Steve, because we mentioned Cody Bellinger before the second ad break. Let's talk about Cody Bellinger for the Cubs, who's kind of the, you know, seamless transition, the rival of the Cardinals. And Bellinger, after a year that he completely broke out, bounced back, however you want to say it, he was one that we were like, it doesn't matter with the, you know, what the Savant page looks like when really, it was all about approach. We know that the guy's obviously shown MVP talent in the past, but this is kind of a reinvented Bellinger with better plate discipline, better, you know, line drive batted balls. That said, I think it was always looming in the back of our mind of like, it's like the reverse of if you show a skill, you demonstrate that you have it. We've seen Bellinger tank. So I think he's got our attention a little bit more when he's 18 games in and he's batting 200, which he is. He does have three homers. And he is on a 4-game hit streak. So it's looking like this could be a little bit of the light at the tunnel. But your thoughts on Bellinger, a guy who is like a third, fourth round pick in a lot of leagues. It's looked pretty grim on the surface so far.
Yeah, it has. He did homer again today. So there is even more extremely recent, light at the end of the tunnel, if you want to put it that way. But what made Bellinger's approach work last year was the elite plate discipline and plate skills that he traded for the contact. He talked about developing a B swing, a two strike approach, something he never had before. And despite the middling quality contacts or well below average quality contact, he made up for that for squaring up the ball. He had a really good sweet spots percentage, and good swing and miss, and a really good strikeout rate. This year, there's been some drop off in that contact rate and swing strike rate, two things that we'd like to talk about because the denominator is pitches, like I'll hammer every April from here on out. But the contact percentage is down to 74%, down from 81%, which is elite last year. And the swing strike rate is up to 12.7%, which isn't horrible, but last year was really good at 9.3%. So he's swinging and missing more, making less contact overall. And the quality contact metrics aren't back to prime Cody Bellinger, 40 home run Cody Bellinger. They're average, essentially. So it is a little concerning if that approach sort of drops off and the quality contact doesn't sort of step in and replace that to kind of counteract the more swing and miss in his game. But that being said, he's still striking out only 17% of the time. He's walking 12% of the time. So those numbers are still good. He's not chasing, which is good and helpful and a good sign. He's chasing less than he was last year. So despite that, I think that it might be more of a buy that I'd be interested in with Cody Bellinger, especially that he's showing signs and starting to heat up. I would take some more swing and miss for average to good quality contact if that meant, maybe he's going to be, someone that could approach, 35 homers rather than the 26 he hit last year, even if it does mean that he's a 270 hitter rather than the 307 that he hit last year. But, there was a change in approach to Bellinger in the second half last year. Towards the end of the season, they basically just started pounding him with fastballs, I believe, and he wasn't able to adjust. And that sort of led to a worse second half for him last year. So that might be continuing. I'm pulling up the pitch percentages that he's seeing now. Yeah, he's seeing 58% fastballs, and he's hitting only 143. Again, it's tough to even look at samples in entire seasons of pitch type, just because you're looking at such small samples. It's been only 142 pitches, whereas last year was 1,200 fastballs. So there's still a lot of room to go for that to be meaningful. But in the small sample, he isn't doing great, and the pitchers are pounding him with fastballs, and he hasn't been great with it. He does have two home runs versus them. I don't know what the home run today was against. I don't know if that was off a fastball or not, but I'm cautiously optimistic about Cody Bellinger. I don't know if it's okay, I need to go get this guy right now, but it's also maybe I think he's starting to figure it out a little bit now.
Any concern at all that we're about, I guess not quite a month, 3 weeks into the season, not a single stolen base attempt after he had 20 last year? Or is that too early? And I mean, it looks like, yeah, he's probably been on first base 15, 20 times between walks and singles. Any concern there, Steve? You think last year's number was going to be, we'll look back on it and say, Yeah, that's a watermark for 20 steals for Bellinger. He's more like a
12. I think I would have banked on 10 to 15 anyway this year rather than the 20. He does have a better sprint speed this year than last year, if that means anything.
I'm just wondering with the new manager if there's like a philosophical thing. I couldn't find anything on that, but
I know that Council's been pretty aggressive on the base pass, at least with Milwaukee. I'll pull up some of their stats now on the bases, but I know Swanson has a few, but I don't think they're like anti running or total red light on the base pass. But actually, wow, they are last in steals. They have 2 steals total as a team. So maybe that is something that they're against. That's shocking to me. I did not think Craig Council was like
anti-steal.
And even still, in this small, it's only been 17 games.
It's early for sure. They've been caught 5 times, so it's like they are still
they have round. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, if Bellinger is a single digit steal guy, because it's been so long since we've seen that, and it looks like this new Bellinger might not be the 30 plus homer guy. It's very tough call. But you're more in on Bellinger bounce back, it seems like, than the Goldie one?
I think so. Yeah. I would be more in on Bellinger than Goldie.
Okay. That'd be a tough one for me to answer. So instead we'll take our second ad break. After this, we still got a handful of names. And we will get to those right after these sponsors.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, so Steve, another WAF name that we talked about many a time last year, Mr. Nolan Jones. And this is one that if you would have told me was going to be on the panic meter rundown, I would have said that sounds pretty on brand for Nolan Jones, because of the names we've mentioned so far, I think he is far and away the most volatile with the K rate, with some of the cold streaks and hot streaks that we saw last year. Not to say that Nolan Jones can't go on a binge, but he's like an even more volatile, like a Gunnar Henderson is a guy who it can be maddening when he's 0-for-20 and then he'll hit homers for 3 or 4 games straight. Nolan Jones is a lot like this, and he's got the Coors factor, but so far he's hitting 171 with a 556 OPS, a homer. He does have a couple steals, but that K rate that had us comparing him a little bit to the Tyler O'Neill and even the Domingo Santana comps, 38.5% K rate is alarming. But where are you at with Nolan Jones on the panic meter? Because this is the first one as well, and there's some other ones we'll talk about that I do think, if it goes south enough, like I think he might be the first one for me that's on that's not on the don't cut list. So I think I would be open to cutting a Nolan Jones if it looks terrible in, late May, early June, for example. But talk to me about what you're seeing here and what your thoughts are on the outlook for Nolan Jones.
I'm always a little more patient with Rockies hitters. Like I want them to get warm games in Colorado. Like I want them to have a warm home stand. That being said, the strikeouts are super concerning, but there are some process stats that may show some signs of encouragement. His contact rate is actually up 3% to 73%. The swing strike rate is down to 10.6%, which, you know, kind of a rule of thumb is your swing strike is your strikeout rate, like plus or minus like 1.3-ish, 1.5. So like a 11% swing strike like he would have shouldn't really mean that he's striking out 40% of the time. But Nolan Jones does have a strange hole in his swing, and basically by having this hole in his swing, he does not swing where he can't make contact, and that's shown in this graphic that I have up here on the stream. He does not make great contact up in the zone. He has really bad whiff rates up in the zone. He acts that by not swinging there a lot. So despite having a decent swing strike rate, he is susceptible to more strikeouts because he does take high strikes in the zone. He doesn't swing that much. Like his swing rate is down to 50%, or down to 55%, and that's in zone. So like he's only swinging at 55% of the pitches in the zone, which is already low. It went down to 55%. But also in this graphic, which I'm bringing up, I think there may be another hole in his swing, which is down in the way. I have 2023 and 2024 side by side here on the graphic with the pitch percentage, so how often he's being pitched in a certain spot of the zone, and his whiff percentage, so how much he's swinging and missing at those spots. So last year and this year, pitchers threw him down and away as a lefty 20% of the time. He did not swing and miss that often. It was still not great. It was 36% of the time that he swung. So with basically a third of his swings, he missed down and away, which you would expect. It's an area that you're getting people to chase. But this year, he's still being thrown in that down and away spot 20% of the time, but he's swinging missing 50% of the time. So that coupled with the fact that there is a hole in the zone, he still has that hole in the zone up and away this year, it is a problem. You know, he made it work last year by basically taking high pitches that he couldn't hit and waiting for pitchers to make a mistake low and crushing it. This year, he now has that hole top of the zone and is swinging and missing down the way. So it's a little concerning. I think that's why he has that elevated strikeout rate right now. And until he sort of starts to spit on that down and away pitch or can do some damage up in the zone, he might have a month or two like this where he struggles. But that being said, I'm still holding Jones basically because, you know, there's still some good quality contact. He's hitting the ball hard 45% of the time. He's not chasing that much. It's a 72nd percentile chase rate. And he's still taking a walk. There is maybe a bit of, you know, I might need to deal with a much lower batting average than I wanted from my fourth or fifth round pick with Nolan Jones here.
Yeah, great chart breakdown too. As a shameless plug for anybody listening to the podcast on Wednesday nights, we do the StreamYard live stream, but you guys can follow on Twitter where we'll retweet it. But that's a great breakdown there, Steve. And I think if you're seeing, with all due respect, holes in his swing, surely MLB teams are seeing this and they're going to attack it. So it'll be interesting. I mean, the one, you know, kind of the first thing you go to with any Coors hitter is just the simple ballpark factor. And they have had four of their six series so far away from Colorado. Yeah. And yeah, his away OPS is 509. His home is 643. So a little bit better, obviously not what you're wanting regardless, but on the road, it's looked dreadful. Whereas at home, it's just, you know, just bad.
Yeah, so, last year he didn't have that problem. That was a big reason why I think he had so much draft helium. He was a really good hitter both at home and on the road.
Yeah,
which has not been the case. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess just to game log him quick, because we were talking about it before, but like just scrolling through, I mean, he's had Gallen and Merrill Kelly, Imanaga, they had the Rays, they had Gallen and Kelly again. So, I mean, they've and then they get the Phillies and the Blue Jays. So they've had a little bit of a tough slate too, but it is the majors, and they don't, you know, they don't get to play the Rockies when they are the Rockies. So, eventually he's got to pick it up. But I do think this one, again, is probably end of May is my comfort level. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that, Steve, but a guy like Nolan Jones, even though you invested the draft capital, it came with that boom bust mentality that like you have to be quick to pivot if it's not looking good for a boom bust.
Sure. That's a fair point. You know, I'm talking like end of May is like, okay, I'll sell for 50 cents on the dollar, whatever. It's still not a drop or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that Jones, you know, is sort of the cerebral guy. Like, he knew how to attack that hole in his own in his swing last year. I think he'll figure it out this year too.
Yeah. So that's Nolan Jones. Moving to another outfielder here, Nick Castellanos with the Phillies. Another guy who it seems like we've brought his name up before on what's going on, and this year, no excuse for pressing, anything like that. It's looked ugly to start with a 169 average, a 239 OBP, and a 169 slug.
So no extra base hits if your slug is the same as your average, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just a singles machine, but you didn't get Castellanos thinking that that you're
not even
like
though, right? How many hits is that? It's
right, yeah. He's 11 like Steven Kwan, man. And
71 at bats, yeah.
Oh man, so everything looks, you know, brutal. A 2.1% barrel rate, the plate discipline stuff, and he was never like squeaky clean, but it looks particularly awful this year. Like, you know, bottom of the league type of chase rate stuff. It's hard to really find what you're excited about for the 32-year-old Castellanos. But you're kind of holding on to the fact that, again, back of the baseball card stuff, usually he figures it out. Now, last year, he had a 272 average, a 787 OPS. He got up to 29 homers. But in 2022, it was straight up a down year. I know he missed some time, but 136 games, just 13 homers and a 263 average. That was a bad year for Castellanos. So do we think this one is like some of the others where you got to have the blind faith? Because I think Castellanos is a new, he's a different tier where, like, yes, he's been around and he's been reliable and he's put in some good seasons, but he's not quite of that ilk of Goldie or even Bellinger, with Bellinger's inconsistencies where, like, really there's been one, maybe two fantasy all-star years for Castellanos, but it's a checkered history. So what are we thinking with this cold start, and is the panic meter going up as I paint this gloomy picture for Castellanos?
It is a little bit, and it's probably, you know, a lower draft day cost. So maybe this area, the last few guys we'll talk about, are maybe a little bit easier to move on from. But if there is anything to hang your cap on with Castellanos, is that despite these kind of horrifying underlying metrics as far as the chase rate, a swing strike rate of 17%. He made it work last year. He had an 18.7% swing strike rate. He swung at pitches outside of the zone 43% of the time. Like, not good stuff, but he still had a good fantasy year because he was able to chip in 29 homers with a good average and 11 steals. He made that work because he hit the ball hard 43% of the time, and he had a decent barrel percentage. He's still hitting the ball hard, but I think he has just one or two barrels with the 2.1% barrel rate. I don't know if he can, like, make you know, magic happen twice, essentially, with what he did last year and making this profile work. I don't know, especially as he gets older and continues to chase. Like, that's something that ages horribly. Guys that age and get older that are free swingers do not age well. Look at Javi Baez as the extreme low-end example, right?
Yeah.
I just don't know if I'd be willing to bet on another bounce back. Also, as you get older, betting on bounce backs are become harder to do and less stable and less predictable. So I guess maybe, you know, you could say that he did get off to a super slow start last year. I think through, you know, the first 16 games, he didn't have a homer last year. And then kind of went on a binge in late April and ended up hitting, you know, close to 30 homers, which is really good for him. It was like an outfield 2-3. I think it's possible. I just don't know if I could bank on it. Like, the Bat X has him at 21 homers with a 257 average. Like, that's still pretty good. Like, if you're buying the projections, like, yeah, you got to buy it. But I don't know. Like, you also see the floor of 2022, like you said, where it was like, that was 13. Not a rosterable fantasy player with, yeah, 13 homers, 7 steals, and a 263 average.
One thing that looks pretty alarming is 99 breaking pitches this season. He has one hit against those pitches. And yeah, you look at some of his like zone swing charts, like you're saying, and you're right, Steve. It's like, that is a bad recipe for an aging hitter, is it swings a lot. Like, we've heard,
yeah,
you know, Sarah's talk about bright bat
red
speed.
He is, yeah, bright red at swings by zone in the bottom outside. Like, those areas that were concerned for Nolan Jones, like, you know, they were like a light red and even a blue. Like, he laid off one of the areas, right? For Castellanos, down and away, it's a bright, bright red. Like, he has swung at 274 of the pitches down there.
Well, and that's where all the breaking stuff is.
And that's where all the breaking. And he's whiffed at 64% of those. Like, it's just horrible, his approach and the way that he's swinging right now.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that there won't be some jacks. Like, I think obviously he'll get some homers, but if you're looking for like an OF2, like, this is the first one that I think I'm ready to say I don't see it happening. Now, I'm not saying that he's not going to end up hitting 15-ish homers and batting like 240, 250, but yeah, the one hit on 99 pitches, breaking pitches, is like, whew, he's got a mountain to climb. So that's Castellanos. Moving to another struggler here in the division, Jordan Walker. Last season it was a whole narrative, right? I mean, he came up, everyone thought that after the spring we would see a fantasy breakout from Walker. He had the kind of odd hot start with like a 18 game hitting streak that got all this attention, but it was the ground ball rate, and they were all singles pretty much. You weren't seeing the over the fence pop that we saw in spring. Then he got sent down. He came back up. The Cardinals were trying to, you know, coach his swing. And then they said, okay, do your thing. It ended up looking okay. But then this year did come in with all that upside, also had some question marks on just what kind of Jordan Walker we would see. I mean, it's like a less powerful version of Vlad, but some of those questions of like, yeah, you hit the ball pretty hard, but the ground ball rate's high, and it's a very poor man's version, of course. So unfortunately it's looked very rough for Walker out of the gate on the surface with a 184 average, 250 OBP, 306 slug, the K rate at near 27%, not ideal at all. And the Cardinals are kind of shuffling around pieces with Victor Scott, Lars Nootbaar coming back. It's starting to feel like a little bit of a carousel, which can be a headache for managers. And Tommy Edman is, you know, so to speak, in the on deck circle as he's coming back from injury, and you better believe he's going to get some reps in the outfield as well. So Jordan Walker, kind of in that same area of the draft as Nick Castellanos, obviously an entire different story when it comes to the upside and probably some of the underlying metrics, but he's a head scratcher, man. And even as a Cardinal fan, like, I wasn't in a huge hurry to reach for the bounce back this year, because again, it's like ever enough things I was excited about, I was also a little bit tepid about. So what are your thoughts with what you're seeing with Walker?
Yeah, there's still some, you know, things to like in his quality contact, still hitting the ball hard 42% of the time, 11% barrel rate is good. The 92.5% average exit velocity. I know average exit velocity isn't a great stat, but it's still 88th percentile in the league. So he's hitting the ball hard. It's 60th percentile for hard hit. Yeah, there are some slight, you know, declines as far as contact rate. Contact rate is actually up, but he's swinging and missing more. He's swinging more in the zone, chasing a little less, so you like to see that. The overall strikeout rate is up, but not terribly. You know, it's a 27% from 22% last year. Still walking. He did have a few. I've watched basically all of his at bats this year. A few balls to like the warning track that were, you know, to dead center that were out. You know, if you follow the baseball savant home run, yeah, the wooded dong. It was like, you know, 24 out of 30 homers. He had another one in Arizona that was really deep. I know they have a park that's really deep. The center there too. He also that's had a game where he had like four hard hit balls where the XBA was above 500 in all of them. He was over four, and like the percentage of going over four and that was crazy low. So he's been super unlucky. But my biggest concern is the fact that the Cardinals have pinched hit for him twice in late situations. They also, you know, sometimes replace him for defense in the outfield. And the fact that that outfield is going to get crowded, not only with Edman, but I think he's a little further along, but Dylan Carlson also potentially may return. You know, I know Victor Scott has struggled, but he does have elite defense. Walker's made some impressive plays too. I know that sometimes could be, you know, if you watch diving catches, it's because, you know, their jump isn't as great and they have to dive to sort of make up for it, right? But I don't think he's been totally lost out there, but I think they have better options. And just the fact that he sat two of the last four games, which maybe, hey, you know, you're in a bit of a slump here, like let's get you right. But also pinch hit for, I think he gets pinch for like Alec Burleson in some situations where they have a righty on the hill late in games. So that's been concerning to me, and maybe thinks that there may be some more playing time risk. But under the hood, there probably is some signs. And I think if you do exercise patience, which I was not able to do in my home league, you probably will end up being rewarded. You know, if he's in a hot streak, like they're not going to pinch hit like that. You know, if he starts to get right and is hitting a few homers, those pinch hitting, for him in late situations is going to be gone, even if he is facing a tough righty in the seventh or eighth inning or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you would take the K uptick, which is sizable, if it meant, you know, it was no doubt 25 plus homer power, because I think that's where we were kind of, you know, what is this contact hitter from Jordan Walker when he looked like he was, you know, Yordan Alvarez in spring last year. And with the prospect pedigree, it wasn't unrealistic. So, yeah, I think there's enough upside and potential. It's unfortunate. It depends on like league size and everything that you moved on. I do think that the Cardinals, just from all of the buzz and how the organization talks about Walker, like I don't think they view him as just a guy. And I still think they're, you know, they're everything with Walker is part of a plan, but it is annoying. And it is to say that there might be, you know, one out of six games where he does sit, which is going to take its toll a little bit, but I don't think he's at risk of actually, you know, getting like a losing a job or anything like that. So that's Jordan Walker to keep us moving. A proper division transition, because Nick Castellanos is no longer on the Reds, but Christian Encarnacion Strand is, and he is another guy like Walker that we were very pumped about last year. Man, just like we thought one of the purer hitters in terms of prospects in a long time. And it's been rough this season with a 192 average. 27.6% strikeout rate. You know that's in his game, but I think that there was a little bit more outlook on his walk rate last year, and just a 1.3% walk rate. So what are we seeing here, Steve? He was a guy that got dropped in my league. I didn't win the waiver bid for him. But what are your thoughts on CES? You know, obviously this is one that could and should be like a 30 homer type of guy that we thought was going to be on the ascent, and he's like stumbling out of the blocks pretty much.
The quality contacts are encouraging. His barrel rate and hard hit are good. But the O swing is not great. So he's chasing bottom 3% of the league as far as his chase rate. And his swing and miss is also not great. 37th on whiff percentage and his overall swing strike rate, which I like to use a little bit more because it's over pitches. Whiffs is whiffs per swing. So the denominator is swings, which, you know, takes out takes, and swing strike is just how often you're swinging and missing at a pitch that you see. So it's a larger denominator, which we like to use, and that's still really high at 14.4%. So I think a little bit more sort of batting average and swing and miss concern than we are led on to believe, because there really wasn't an elevated strikeout rate in the minors or much swing and miss. But maybe that was telling in the 14.5% swing strike rate he had last year and a 29% strikeout rate with just a 5.8% walk rate, that he's a bit of a free hacker that was kind of covered up by the, you know, the 13 home runs and the 805 OPS he put up in a 63 game sample, which I know a lot of it came like, right, he got really hot towards the end of the year, which led to some more draft helium. I think he was really good in the spring, which led to even more. And it sort of fell flat on his face. I don't know. I think that I take the under on like a 250 batting average, but I could still see, like, you know, the 30 homers being possible, with just the raw power that he has and the fact that he's still hitting the ball hard. Has hit a ball 113 miles an hour so far already this year. Like I said, the barrel rate is good. He does have six barrels already. So, yeah, and it's another thing like Coors, like, right, once Cincinnati starts to play a bunch of home games in that bandbox in warm weather, the ball's going to start flying. Not that Encarnacion Strand doesn't have the raw power to hit that anywhere, but I think this is one where I'm kind of like, all right, maybe this is more of like a lower-end starting first baseman, like a good power guy that – has some other deficiencies in his game.
Yeah, kind of I was laughing as you were talking there. It's like they've not fully Eugenio Suarez back in.
Yeah,
Cincy,
no, that's a good comp, I think.
Yeah, I think what's upsetting to me is that at AAA, you know, I mean, he was a guy I stashed for like 7 weeks last year, and at AAA, it was just a 22% K rate. 10% walk rate.
That's why he was so hyped as a prospect.
And
a
331 batting average. So that's where it was more like, you know, the Freddie Freeman, the Vinny Pasquantino, just that type of a guy. And now it's like, oh, no, maybe it's more like a Rowdy Tellez or, you know, just somebody like that. And, yeah, it's turned me off a little bit on you know, certain shallower leagues. But I think, obviously, the pop is real. The 70-grade raw power is there and everything. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's, if as long as you're planning on like a 240, when it heats up in Cincy, you're going to get the homers, you're going to get some ribbies. But yeah, it's going to come with some strikeouts and probably some slumps that you're going to have to be set up for, kind of Kyle Schwarber-esque. So, yeah, I think that's just discovering who CES is compared to last year when we thought he was like this pure hitting machine, and it just might not be that. Ground ball rate also up pretty high this year. I don't know if we hit on that yet, but any closing thoughts there, Steve? Or as you look
sort
at
of
this rundown,
a closing thought on CES and sort of just as hit on hitters as a whole, like, it's only been 18 games, and it's an old adage, but pitchers are always ahead of hitters early in the season. The weather's always cold. There are a lot of off days sprinkled in, so teams can play around with their rotations to throw their aces more. I know a lot of those aces are hurt, but still teams have favorable schedules and you can see better pitchers more often. They're not into call up mode to their sixth or seventh starters or even eighth starters yet. So, and hitters still have to make their adjusted back. It's okay. Nolan Jones is being fed fastballs or pitches down in the way now. I have to make an adjustment back. It's a game of cat and mouse. And we're basically at the point where hitters are sort of just still collecting their data. They're behind the eight ball already because hitters are behind pitchers to start, just as far as readiness to start the season. So, not again to poo-poo this entire episode that we did breaking down all these stats, but hitters are still behind and it just needs a little bit more time. With pitchers, we get so much data in one start. There's only 30 starts for a pitcher, right? So that's, we're essentially at the one start point for hitters, right? We're at 10% of the season, a little bit over that, right?
Let me throw out for an example, Steve, of what you're saying. So if you look at team stats this year so far, from team 17 to team 30, there's a sub 700 OPS. So almost the entire bottom half of the league is a sub 700 OPS. All of last year, there were only five teams that were on the hitting sub 700.
That's a great little nugget. The hitters are going to get a lot better.
It will come around.
The weather's going to warm up. A lot of these guys that we talked about, it's going to sound silly that we even talked about them struggling. Sure, there may be one or two that don't turn it around. And there was another great thread on Twitter that's been over years. I forget who did it. I wish I remembered. I'd give it a shout out, but. At the 18 game, at the 15 game mark, wherever out in the season, 18 game mark, they just listed off the hitters who don't have home runs at this point.
And it's I feel like funny. Vlad Sedler's always throwing tweets out like that.
Acuna was on that list until today. Trey Turner was on that list last year. Marcus Semien was on that list the year after he hit 42 homers, and he ended up close to 30 that year. Nick
Rizzo,
Castellanos
Brian
was on
Dozier.
This list. Yep. Yeah. Nick Castellanos was on this list last year and ended up with 29 homers. But there's also guys like Chris Bryant who were on this list last year. There is some concerns, and there's going to be one or two guys that may not bounce back or not fully bounce back, but the hitters are going to get a lot better. So just be patient if you're struggling with hitters. And there's a lot of guys that are hot right now that aren't going to I don't think that Michael Bush is going to win the MVP as good as he's been. And as much as I like him long term, I think he's a really good player. There's ebbs and flows to hitting.
Absolutely.
It's super easy to get involved or too hyped on flavor of the weeks in hitting because there is no stat line. So if you see a guy has four homers, five homers right now, it's going to look amazing because they're going to be the league leader in everything. If a guy has four or five homers in a short span in August, you may not pay attention or care as much, or at least be a little bit more hesitant because there's more of a sample that we have to judge on.
Yeah, that's well put. A great, great wrap up as well. So the season storylines are underway, and we'll talk about these guys continue. A lot of these guys are big names. We don't always get to talk about the big names when we get into the dog days, but we'll keep tabs and remember that these guys had slow starts, come back to the show. But gotta love when the storylines are starting to be written, good or bad, as long as it's not injured. And we'll follow it all season, once a week. Again, hope you guys join if you're listening to the pod on the live stream, which we're doing on Wednesday nights every week, usually about 9 o'clock Eastern, somewhere in that ballpark. So please join us, and you guys can find those on Twitter from our podcast at Wins Above Pod. I am at @Van_Verified. Steve is at @Stav8818. But that wraps us up for episode 135, talking about the panic meter and how worried we are or are not about some struggling hitters early on in the season. Thank you all for joining us. Good luck the rest of the week. Otherwise, thanks for talking baseball.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.